Now, on UK Health Radio, treat yourself to an upgrade. Pack away your low self-esteem. Leave behind that empty feeling. Stow your fears and doubts in the overhead locker. And go from stress to authentic success with Danielle Sachs.
Hello, 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 and welcome once again to another show from Stress to Authentic Success. I am so delighted to be with you today because I've been away for a few weeks and I did a few repeat shows because I really needed a break, a holiday, and I'm sure many of you recognize that. I am truly walking my talk, having a holistic, conscious self-care lifestyle. And sometimes we just need to take a distance. And today, it is actually really a very special conversation that I'm going to have because I'm going to talk to Dr. Russell Kennedy. And he's my age, which, you know, a grandfather of two, and he's known as the anxiety MD. So he's a visionary physician in the field of anxiety disorders, which is one of my little, how can I say, in Flemish, we say stokpaartjes, but I would say in English, it is one of my triggers in the whole story of my health in those 62 years that I'm on this planet. Anxiety has been one of my challenges in my life. And it is one of the things that made me very, very ill at a certain stage. It has a lot to do with stress. And I cannot, you know, I'm so happy to talk to Dr. Russ today because he's going to talk and give us an explanation and probably some examples, some tips, some insights on what exactly anxiety is, because he has such a diverse background in medicine, neuroscience, development, psychology, yoga, meditation. He is even a stand-up comedian, and he has redefined the understanding and treatment of anxiety from both and scientific and humanistic perspectives. So he himself, his work is based on overcoming that lifelong battle with chronic crippling worry, creating even the award-winning and best-selling book, Anxiety RX. He even has an Anxiety RX podcast. And yeah, he's some really special expert, if you ask me. I found his topic, how he approaches anxiety, is really interesting. And I cannot wait to have this beautiful, passionful, I think, conversation, because he is today empowering individuals from all over the world to overcome anxiety and embrace a life of calm and fulfillment. And I'm, for one, a fan and really looking forward to see how he approaches this anxiety and what he has to tell you and me that we can do in our life to understand anxiety better. And so also feel it, heal it, etc. So in a few minutes, I'm going to talk to him. But first, I just want to ask you, if you would like more information, more inspiration, more motivation than just this podcast or radio show, then I suggest you go to Danielle Sachs on the Instagram and follow me there, because I have so much there to offer you. Quotes, testimonials, little stories, little reels. And I'm really, really going for it because I realize that I want to mean something in the world. I want to be an example that gives you all that information, all that inspiration to live an authentic life, to actually really go into the journey of living authentic success. And I'm sure I'll talk with Dr. Russ about that too. So I'm going to take a little break now and we'll be back talking to Dr. Russell Kennedy.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Good,
Welcome back. And I am truly, really excited today because I am talking to the one and only, the anxiety MD, I'm going to call you, Dr. Russell Kennedy. Welcome.
Thanks, Danielle. It's really nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm quite excited because I'm not sure if the audience knows about this. I'm going to start with a personal thing, but I had a huge anxiety disorder when I got sick at 38 years old. So I really, really am curious to hear your story, how you started to be so interested in anxiety, because I believe you also went through a bad patch of time. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all came down. I grew up with a father who had schizophrenia and bipolar disorder. So my childhood was kind of this sort of on again, off again thing with my dad, because sometimes he'd be very caring, playful, fun, generous, you know, just a great dad. And then he would get extremely depressed and suicidal or psychotic because he did have schizophrenia. So what I learned as a child was it's not safe to trust love because it's just going to get pulled away from you. And I still have that. My amygdala has still kind of encoded that in my system, that love isn't safe.
Yes.
Now I'm well past it, but it's still something that when I'm going through stress myself, I tend to withdraw. So I think it really comes down to that original wound, because 80% of your brain development occurs before you're 5 years old. So depending on what kind of attachment style, how attuned you were to your parents, how they resolved trauma, because we all have trauma as children.
Yes.
Like, you can't be a child in this human world and not have trauma. It's just how it gets repaired is really determines how well your nervous system is going to reflect for the rest of your life.
Interesting. So what happened? Let's say you became a doctor, and how did you come into being that specialist in anxiety then?
Well, I think there's an unconscious desire for me to help, because I felt so helpless as a child. I couldn't really help my dad. So I think that's one of the reasons I became a medical doctor, was there was this sense that I wanted some power over illness. Now, the flip side of that was that I would see people in my practice who there wasn't a whole lot I could do for them, you know, chronic illnesses, that kind of thing. So it was funny because, you know, my mind had said, hey, do this and you'll have some power over illness. And then I was faced with places where I had illness and no power again. So it's funny how we recapitulate our childhood. You know, Freud called it the repetition compulsion. What was normal for you in childhood, you will unconsciously replicate in your adulthood. So I think I did that as well. And becoming a doctor was, you know, kind of above my pay grade in a lot of ways, because I, you know, I struggled through med school with anxiety and that kind of thing. And it just became to the point where it wasn't satisfying for me being a medical doctor, because I wasn't really getting to the root cause of what was causing people's problems. And I was often just prescribing medications because I only had 7 to 10 minutes with people. And what was really frustrating was I wanted to make this emotional connection, but I didn't have the time.
Wow. And so today you are that expert in anxiety. Tell us a little bit of what, according to you and your expertise, what is anxiety? Because a lot of people talk about anxiety, but what is it according to you? Because it is a mind-body thing, hey?
Sure. Yeah. I think anxiety itself is just anxious thoughts. But what the pain comes from, because the thoughts aren't necessarily painful. Like I draw this example of, if I have two 15-year-olds in my medical office, a male and a female, and I go in and I tell the female, hey, you might be pregnant, her system is going to go into high alarm. But if I go in and say, hey, Jake, you're pregnant, he's just going to laugh. So anxiety in and of itself is just the anxious thoughts we tell ourselves, but the alarm is what causes the pain. The alarm is what happens when we believe those negative thoughts. And then we get into something that I call the alarm. Yeah, the alarm anxiety cycle. So the quick version is, we experience a trauma as children that's too much for us to bear. It overwhelms our nervous system. So we go into this high alert state. And then in that high alert state, because children blame themselves for what goes on in their families, they start internalizing this sense that they're wrong. You know, they need to be shamed, blamed, judged, and abandoned. And that starts very early. And when you shame or judge, abandon, blame, and shame yourself, what I call JABS, judge, abandon, blame, and shame. When you do that to yourself, you create this internal split. And when you create this internal split, that creates a tremendous amount of autonomic arousal in your body, like sympathetic nervous system, fight or flight energy. And then when your body's in fight or flight, your mind, which is a compulsive, meaning-making, make-sense machine, takes that feeling, that alarm feeling in your body that's been there since you've been 5 years old or 7 years old or 12 or whatever, and turns it into negative thoughts. And then because you made the thoughts, you believe them, and we get into what I call the alarm anxiety cycle. So anxiety, to answer your question, is really a state of alarm that's in your body that your mind is just making sense of.
And maybe a strange question, but what is the difference between anxiety and stress, if I ask you that?
Well, it's really difficult to kind of draw a difference because it's very subjective, right? Mm. Like some people are just born more sensitive than others.
Yes, I agree.
Right? So if you're born sensitive, which a lot of us are, and more studies are starting to show that inherent sensitivity is almost a genetic trait. It's almost like temperament, right? So if you're born very sensitive, and I talk to parents about this too, they say, you know, I have two kids, one of them is like whatever, and the other one is like, you know, always worked up about something or other. So I think if you're born inherently sensitive into a loving, caring, attuned, detached environment, you'll do fine. But if you're born sensitive and there is trauma in your household, and there doesn't have to be a lot of trauma, like if you're very sensitive, you know, the death of your goldfish can send you into it, like a panic. So I think it's this combination of sensitivity and your underlying, you know, internal childhood condition. And the combination of the two resets your nervous system to a place where you either feel that life is fun and loving and warm and about relationships and connection, or life is about survival. And if you learn that life is about survival, anything that's negative in your internal or external environment will be really focused on, and anything that's positive just sort of fades into the background.
Yes.
This human confirmation bias. So we're constantly reaffirming what we're scared of. So of course we're anxious.
Interesting, hey? So how do you, if somebody's listening now and saying, but I'm really battling with the worrying and the, you know, making assumptions and all that kind of thing. What is a first step that you would say to shift out of anxiety?
Is to find it in your body. Get out of your head, because you can't solve a feeling problem like anxiety with a thinking solution. Anxiety is generally a problem of overthinking. So you're not going to solve a thinking problem with more thinking. Is basically what is it. So when you're feeling anxious, look into your body. Like for me, it's in my solar plexus. It's a hot sort of purple. And this is the funny part about it. It feels hot and icy cold at the same time, because we're often dealing with these unconscious, you know, amygdala based, you know, we're not going to get too scientific here, but amygdala based programs that are in our body. There's another part of our brain called the insula, which is kind of like the feeling, the part that sort of translates feeling to thinking and thinking to feeling. And I do believe that when we get traumatized as children and that trauma isn't repaired or resolved, we create a certain body state in ourselves when we're, again, 5, 7, 8, 12 years old. And I do believe that body state gets reignited when we get stressed as adults.
Every time, again and again.
Yeah. And it's the same, and it's the same feeling. So I coined this term called an emotional signature. So we have a certain, when we get stressed, we get an emotional signature. So for example, I did stand-up comedy for 10 years. My anxiety before I open the curtains and go on stage is quantitative and qualitatively different than the anxiety, my just general free-floating general anxiety disorder. So it's very different, and it's finding that in your body. Like, where do I feel stressed right now? I'm worried about my daughter. I'm worried about my job, whatever it is. So close your eyes, go into your body. Where do you feel? Is it in your throat? Is it a pain? Is it a pressure? Does it have a temperature? Does it have a color? Is it superficial? Is it deep? Like when I do sessions with people, this is what we do. And we zone in on where that alarm is. Because that insula, that part of our brain that encoded this when we originally had the trauma that wasn't resolved, is still there. And that's the place we can go in, almost revisit that place, revisit that child and show them, hey, we're not back there anymore. You know, we're not that 7-year-old who's being locked in a closet. We're not that, you know, in a car with our father and our father screaming. We're not there anymore. But our amygdala tells us that we are. and we react to that. Our body reacts to it, and our body dictates how our mind thinks. And I think that's one of the problems with general medicine, psychiatry, psychology, is they believe that anxiety is rooted in the mind.
Mm.
I believe that it's rooted in the body and only reflected by the mind. Now, of course, your thoughts create the alarm, and your alarm creates the thoughts. But I believe that it's more of an alarm system in your body that gets fired up first, and then that fires up the thoughts of the mind. And we're so used to using language to communicate with ourselves and other people, we assume that those thoughts are the originator of the anxiety, when they're just a byproduct of it.
And is one of the causes of the problem not that we are so disconnected, living in our head in these days, and actually disconnected from our body and from our true selves? Isn't that what you're working on to get back that connection?
Yeah. I feel that anxiety in and of itself, the pathologic part of anxiety, is a separation of mind and body, which is why like things like yoga and that kind of stuff help. Yoga joins your mind and your body, and a separation of your adult self, your self today, and your child self.
Yes.
So the child in us holds a lot of our pain. So the adult in us doesn't want to go back there and visit the child, because the child holds all our pain. And the child is looking at us, our adult self, saying, hey, I need help. I need help. And you're ignoring me. So the two sides just get more and more separated as we get older. And as the adult and child and mind and body get separate, we feel more stress. We have more alarm. It just triggers that old, you know, grooved alarm that's been there since we were a child.
And do you believe that anxiety, that alarm system in your body, can create the chronic illnesses that we see today? Is that
absolutely?
Mm.
Yeah, there's a lot of studies, again, not to get too scientific, but interleukins, there's a lot of like physical chemicals, neuropeptides that get secreted from stress that enhance inflammation in the body.
Yes.
So I see lots of people, and I tell my doctor colleagues, if you see somebody that comes in and they say, you know, my right arm goes numb, my left eye, it burns when I pee, you know, like if you get somebody that has all these really different symptoms that don't fit into a category, because typically as doctors, we're pattern recognizers.
Yes.
And if something doesn't if something doesn't fit a pattern, we're likely to say, oh, it's all in your head. You know, but it's not all in your head. And I always tell doctors, is like, look for childhood trauma then, because childhood trauma shows up in these weird, weird symptoms.
And
that's why I think people often get diagnosed with Lyme disease that really don't have Lyme disease, because Lyme disease has all these weird symptoms, gastrointestinal, neurological, all this kind of stuff. And a lot of that things get mimicked by childhood trauma. So yeah, of course we start showing up with physical illnesses in our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, because that energy has to go somewhere. That alarm energy, if it's not metabolized and healed and worked through and integrated, it will show up in your body. That's what will happen.
And can you tell us what is your almost, I'm not saying miracle kind of healing, but how would you say that you are healing that anxiety and that trauma?
It's really connecting your mind and your body, for one, you know, feeling more in your body, just doing things with your body, putting your hand over your chest, you know, connecting with sensation. I have this little mantra that I developed years and years ago called sensation without explanation. So even if the sensation is painful, so even if you're worried or scared about something, find it in your body. A lot of people will find it in their midline, throat, heart, stomach, that kind of thing. And then if you feel it and it does have a temperature or pressure or pain or whatever, see if you can isolate it and then put your hand over it. Because I really do feel that alarm is a reflection of your younger self that wanted to be, you know, seen, heard, loved, and protected and wasn't. So you can do that now. And that's the thing about the amygdala. It has no sense of time. So when we get stressed, when we get anxious, we go back into an age regression. So we turn into children again, but we don't realize that we've turned into children. And it's like, can we find that child again? And one of the ways of doing that is physical touch. Like, find this in your body where you feel it, put your hand over it, breathe into it. Essential oils are often really helpful, because the thing about the rhinencephalon, the part, the smell, what's called the smell brain, is it's connected directly to the amygdala, and it's connected directly to our stress response. So if we have a smell that we condition ourselves that calms us, it will continue to calm us. And every other sense, touch, sight, hearing, every other sense goes through this part of our brain called the thalamus. But smell goes directly into the emotional brain. So if you can acclimatize yourself to a smell that really soothes you when you do get stressed, you can use that smell to bring yourself into the present moment. And again, sensation without explanation. Even if that sensation is painful, connect with it. Because I do believe, and this is where Dr. Russ gets a little flaky, is I do believe that that's your younger self.
Yes.
Because again, the amygdala has no sense of time. You know, if you see somebody like absolutely losing themselves, like freaking out, I can guarantee you that they're in an age regression. You know, all emotional overreactions are age regressions. So if you see that in your parents, your kids, whatever, it's like you can see they've regressed. So now you're talking to an 8-year-old. So how would you talk to an 8-year-old? You would talk to them with a soothing voice. You would, you know, get it and do this for yourself. You know, talk to yourself with a compassionate, kind voice.
Beautiful.
Because so often in this society, we just drive ourselves, and it's and it gives us the illusion of success. Because if you drive yourself, you can become financially successful. But as my mentor in developmental psychology, Gordon Neufeld, would say, at what cost? Like, at what cost?
I'm so glad you say that. That's one of the reasons why my branding is Living Authentic Success, because what is success if you sacrifice your own well-being, your emotional, mental, physical health? I mean, I think health is the new wealth, if you ask me, but
I agree.
You know, certainly after COVID, there is a bit of an awareness coming, that there's more, that health and well-being are so important. Now, just to ask you, how did you move from, because the show is called From Stress to Authentic Success, and you've become, I mean, if there's one person, you know, living authentic success, you are an illustration of that. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And what is authentic success to you?
I think it's doing what you love and getting paid for it.
Yes.
You know, I think that's part of it too, is, and part of it too, that I found, like I'm making quite a bit of money now in my, I have a course called Your Mind Body Prescription for Permanent Anxiety Healing. I have my book, Anxiety RX, and both of those, the book is still bringing in $20,000 a month. The course is bringing in about $60,000 a month, and I've never had this level of success before. Now, by the same token, Danielle, it's stressful for me.
Yes.
Because, you know, this is a
different
new thing for me.
Yeah.
Last week I went out and bought golf clubs that are $4,000. Now, I never would have done that a year. I never would have done that even as a doctor, you know, making a pretty good living. I never would have done that. But now there is this kind of sense that, okay, so I've been really looking at this issue. What is authentic success? And I think it's just doing with the money or the resources that you get from your stress, the things that you love to do. You know, I'm taking my entire family, there's 12 of us, to Mexico. It's going to be very expensive, but it's something I really want to do. So rather than buying myself a new car, I think it's really more important for me to take everybody to Mexico and connect.
Is it not a sense of freedom about...
There is a sense of
being
freedom.
Able to
Absolutely.
Do what you... Yeah, I find that is freedom. That's what true freedom is to me.
Yeah, because I grew up, like my mother was a registered nurse, but... You know, we always lived paycheck to paycheck. We never owned our own house. We always lived. So there was always this sense of, you know, money is scarce. Money is scarce. Like I grew up with that. So now that I look at my bank account and I go, wow, this is different. I don't have to worry about this. And there's almost like a longing for the old self that worried about money. Like this is what authentic success
is.
I think people have this idea that, okay, well, you know, you're making $100,000 a month. You're going to be just brilliantly happy. And at points, I really am. I really am. But at other points, it's very destabilizing because it's not what I grew up with.
You know,
even as a doctor.
And then we come back to what you've been saying.
Yeah.
We come back to the trauma of the child. And so it's a cycle. Hey.
Yeah. Wherever you go, there you are. Right. So even becoming a doctor for me, like people would think, oh, you know, you're wildly successful becoming a doctor. For me, because I didn't really like being a doctor, not because I didn't like doing the work. I loved helping people. But what I really hated was the restrictions in Canada. Like everything is like, it takes 3 months to get an MRI and it takes 2 years to get a psychiatric consult. You know, it's so frustrating to be a doctor in Canada, even though the system is technically free for the people. Everybody waits for everything. And as a doctor, you know, you want to get your people seen. You want to get their issues dealt with.
Yes.
And if they're always coming in going, you know, I haven't had my MRI yet. I'm still waiting for my psychiatry referral, all this kind of stuff. It's very frustrating. So I had the success of becoming a doctor, which I found, you know, okay, great.
But now you're living your authentic.
But now I'm living
aligned,
my authentic self. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Aligned now, with. So. Yeah. And what always interests, I find interesting to say is that authentic success has to do often with the pain and the trauma. And that's what I find so interesting, because it's going through the pain that you find your purpose and that alignment with who you truly are. And isn't that amazing?
Yeah. And I think we're all, you know, it's almost like there's a sense of determinism, you know, like you were meant to go through these things. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, no one knows and that kind of thing. But I have this sense that I was meant to have the dad that I did.
Yes.
You know, because I wouldn't be doing any of this stuff had it not been for the pain and suffering that I went through with my father. And I love that Buddhist comment too, like pain in this life is unavoidable, but suffering is optional. And I think that's what we do with anxiety, is that we feel this alarm in our body, which is the pain, which is unavoidable. But then we add the thoughts to it. We add the self, the judgment, the abandonment, the blame and the shame of ourselves, what I call jabs. And then that adds the suffering. And it's the suffering that makes it so hard to get out of. If we just dealt with the pain, and that's what I'm saying, if you find the pain and you just deal with it on its own terms, it's going to be uncomfortable, no doubt about it. But at least you're getting at the root cause, which I never did as a doctor. I was always just giving prescriptions. At least you're getting to the root cause of the problem, as opposed to just treating the symptoms, which you'll do for the rest of your life.
Yeah, I agree. I forgot to ask you something about when you were talking about feeling in the body. Does it help? Because that's what I do in my hypnosis with people. Does it help to actually make a metaphor around it? Like, what does it feel like? Is it a color? What form? So that people can actually really see it in their minds and visualize it. And like you say, touch it and even destroy it, or I'm not saying destroy.
No, I know
that's what I mean.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean. Like,
is that
a
good
say,
way to do it?
Yeah. A lot of people will say, I want to get rid of my anxiety. It's like, well, your anxiety is a messenger. Your anxiety is telling you that something in your life isn't in alignment, and it probably hasn't been since you were, you know, a young child. So how can you get yourself back in alignment with yourself? And I think it's understanding that pain that you're going through is the pain of the child. And can you go back? And the more you can sort of drill down into it, does it have a temperature? Does it have a color? Is it superficial? Is it deep?
Yes.
Where is it in your body?
Yes.
The more you get into that insula, and the more you make the more you make the unconscious conscious.
Yes.
And when you do that, you can start to go in there and tinker around with it and change it. But if every time you get stressed, every time you get anxious, you go into your head, and the problem is actually in this place in your solar plexus, you're never going to metabolize it, because you're never spending any time with it. So the only way that we can actually metabolize it and change it is if we actually allow ourselves to get into it. And because it's painful, we want to resist it. And in our immediate gratification society, dopamine driven immediate, there's so many distractions out there. And this is why our kids are suffering so much, is because our kids actually don't have to deal with a lot of pain for any length of time. So they never learn how to deal with it. They never learn how to deal with frustration or boredom or whatever, because all they have to do is go to their phone. So we're raising a bunch of kids who don't have that internal sense, like,
escape.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Like a kind of, the screen is a kind of an escape to me.
It's totally. And it's and it's a dissociation. If you look at it, I do this. Like, I'm not saying that it's strictly to kids. But like my wife will say, are you zombie scrolling Instagram again? And it's like, yeah, you know, because it's like there's part of me that feels uncomfortable with something. So I'll go to my phone. Now, I know that I'm doing it most of the time. So it's really important to realize how you distract. How do you pull yourself away from the pain? Because unless you actually go into the pain and allow yourself to process it, it's always going to be in you. Now, I'm not saying this is easy.
Is that how you get also addictions, like, the
Yeah.
escape, and every time again and again, because in my practice, I see so many people, whether it's overeating, emotional eat, whether it's drinking, whether it's such a common thing. It's a kind of escape, and then it becomes an addiction because it's a pattern that it works
Oh,
for
yeah.
them. Every time the escape works, they don't feel the pain as much. And then, do you see that often in your practice as well?
Yeah, because I think addictions are our brain's way of accepting love. So people who are addicted to
Oh,
opiates or
say that again.
morphine, so
Say that again.
our
Brain.
addictions are our brain's way of accepting love because we won't give love to
Oh,
ourselves. We're too
I
busy
agree.
judging, abandoning, blaming. So if you take a medication, a benzo or an opiate or whatever, all of a sudden you feel this warm need to connect with yourself and others. Like you feel connect, and this is what you want. But if you're afraid of love because of your childhood, because of the trauma, and not everything is childhood trauma, but most
Yes,
of
a
it
lot.
is. If you allow you so you won't allow yourself to feel love because and that's one of the reasons why people are so anxious is they won't allow themselves to feel love. But one of the things that alcohol or whatever, you see the guys, they go out with their friends and it's like, I love you, man. It's the only
Yes,
time they
yes.
actually they're drunk. So basically what happens is it pulls down your defenses to the point where you can actually accept the love that you really, really want. And that's why addictions are so difficult to treat. But, a lot of times I will tell people, like, if you take like benzodiazepines or opiates or whatever, they're just love substitutes. Like
I
that's all
agree.
they are. They
I
because
agree.
they overwhelm your resistance to love.
Yeah.
So people can feel loving and connected towards themselves when they're high on a medication or whatever that they normally won't allow themselves. So that's why I think addiction is so difficult to treat and powerful at the same time.
Yes. And is it not all about loving the inner child in us?
Yeah, but that's
Like
hard because,
giving
like I said,
ourselves that love, because we often haven't had it from our parents. I see it every day here. No hugs, no confirmation, no validation. And so isn't that at our job as an adult to give the love to that inner child?
Yeah, but if you don't trust love, if that was your pattern when you were a child, if you didn't trust love
Then you
for
can't
other
do it.
people, how are you going to do it to yourself? And that's what people tell me that all the time. It's like I have a really hard time loving myself. Because the template for love really, love was scary. For me, love was scary for my
Or
dad because it would
unsafe,
always,
or
or unsafe, right? Out. So it's like if love is unsafe or scary for you and you need to give yourself love to heal, you're in a very difficult position, right? So you have to learn, we have to kind of go at it gradually, go at your ability to love yourself and care for yourself gradually, which is why I say, let's go into the body and see that as a younger version of yourself. And I often tell people, get a picture of yourself when you're, 3, 4, 12 years old and really focus on
Beautiful.
that child and see and put it up in your bathroom mirror or whatever and connect with them, even though it hurts, like even though going back there hurts. But I always tell people, when you feel like you're on the right track, your brain starts secreting dopamine. So if you feel like you are connecting with this child in you, your brain will start going, yeah, you're on the right track. But other part of your brain will go, oh, but this is painful. And it's like,
Yes,
yeah,
as it doesn't
but we're
want
on
to.
the right track. Like we're actually doing something that can help heal us as opposed to just being in this continuous cycle of, alarm, the alarm calms down, the alarm again, and you just live in that cycle, which I lived in for 25 years.
A lot of people do.
Oh yeah.
And in this
Yeah, it's the
society, it's
default
so
setting.
easy to escape, like we talked about. I mean, that for me is, and we could teach children in schools on how to listen to their body and feel the pain and all that kind of thing. And we don't, it's so
It's
sad.
hard. It's hard. And it's also, because when you're dealing with kids who have been emotionally, physically, sexually abused, it's so charged that it's really hard to kind of have a one size fits all thing for people. And it usually starts to show up in teenagers, young adults, but it's like, can we find that early? That thing that as a child you weren't allowed to say, or that you wouldn't tell yourself you could say. A lot of people who grew up with abusive parents, when you ask them about it, they say, oh, my dad was, he had his issues, but he was okay, because they've been denying their parental dysfunction since they've been
And
six
they don't
years
want to
old.
judge their parents. They regardless of the abuse, they still want to be loyal to their parents. So it's quite interesting. Can
And
you
then they've
tell
been
me?
denying it. Oh yeah, I just one more. Yeah, they've been denying it since they've been children. You know, if your dad's an abusive alcoholic, it's like, yeah, he's not that bad. He drinks, but so you've been denying it since you've been 6 years old. So when someone asks you about it, because you've been denying it since you were a child, you don't see it as a problem. I had one guy who was beaten by his dad from the time he was 7 to his 12, and he didn't see that as a problem because he said, well, it made me strong. You know, it made me a good salesperson. It's like, no,
No.
that is actually trauma, right?
Mm.
So that's what you that the level of denial is difficult to break through.
I agree. Now, Dr. Ross, can you tell us, is there a quote, not a quote, that's for the end, but is there a statement, something that you live by to conquer that anxiety, and that is there something that helps you
Yeah,
continuously every day to that you live by?
I just realized that the anxiety is actually a source of alarm that's in my body. And then I try and separate the alarm in my body from the anxious thoughts of my mind. So what I'll do is when I start worrying or ruminating, it's like, oh, okay, this is actually not helping me. Where do I feel this? And almost always for me, it's in my solar plexus. So I put my hand over it, I connect with it, and I say sensation without explanation, and I sit with it. Because if you can break the anxiety alarm cycle, you know, if you can learn that you can allow yourself to feel the alarm in your body, even though it hurts, but not compulsively add thoughts to it. And the little analogy that I draw is you have a campfire, but you don't have any water, so you have to wait for the campfire to go out.
God.
Now, if you keep throwing matches on that fire, on that, you know, embers, it's never going to go out. And the matches are kind of analogous to the thoughts of your mind. So if you stop throwing matches on the fire, if you stop giving credibility to your thoughts and you focus instead directing your energy to the sensation in your body and the sensation of alarm, you're actually, you know, wrapping up your dopamine circuits because you're on the right track, as opposed to getting lost in your thoughts. Because if you're lost in your thoughts, that alarm will
That's
never change.
never
You know?
ending.
Nope. Because it's like having a motorcycle in your front yard and you want to learn how to ride a motorcycle. So you go out to the motorcycle and you go, no, I need to read another book on how to, you know, do the brakes or do the gears or whatever. You go back in the house. And then it's like the next day you got it. It's like, oh, you go out to the motorcycle and you're like about to get on. It's like, no, I need more. I need to know about the mirrors. And you go back in. So if you never get on that motorcycle and ride it and maybe fall off a couple of times, you never learn how to adapt to that kind of thrill of dealing with your emotions and living in that emotive state and living in your body as opposed to living in your mind. And that's a reason why people say as they get older, I feel like my life is going by. I feel like everything, because you're living in your head. You're not living in your body anymore.
I agree.
So as you learn to live in your body, even though that's where the pain is, you learn how to metabolize that and you learn how to sort of live with it and allow it to be there. And then that way you metabolize it as opposed to just running into your head or going into your phone and distracting. So that's
Beautiful.
how you heal instead of just coping.
Beautiful. And is there a quote you live by? Because we almost, is there a quote that doesn't
Yeah,
have to do
there's a,
with anxiety,
yeah,
just
no.
something that you like you've mentioned already two or three, but is there a quote that you really would like to say to the audience that is something you want to end with in this conversation?
I
Something
mean,
to
the thing that I tell
inspire
myself,
others?
yeah, it's my own. It's not anxiety of your mind. It's alarm in your body. So find the alarm in your body, process that, and then you heal it. Because the little analogy that I draw is you're in a rowboat. There's a hole in it. It's filling up with water, and the water filling up is the anxiety. Now you can bail water out of that, and you could feel a little better as the water level goes down. But unless you go under and you patch that hole in the boat, unless you find that alarm in your body, see it, hear it, love it, and protect it because it is your younger self. That's how you heal. That's how you can kind of sail forward as opposed to otherwise, you're always just bailing water. You're always just trying to fix your thoughts. And that's a never-ending process. I can tell you, I did that for 25 years.
Oh, I so love this conversation. Thank you so much. We
Oh,
can
you're
talk
welcome,
for
Vivian.
another
Of
hour,
course.
but
Of course.
maybe you'll have to come back because there's
Sure.
something I want to talk about as well with like panic attacks. Just
Sure.
a last little thing, panic attacks. Is that for you an exaggerated kind of anxiety?
Well, yeah, I mean, when I see people with panic attacks, I always ask them the same question. what is the internal conflict that you're wrestling with? So
Oh,
they may
okay.
be like, a lot of people are, well, maybe not a lot, but some people are having an affair and they're like, should I stay with my partner or should I go with this new person or in their job? Like there's always some major conflict that you can't
Conflict.
resolve that you're kind of just trying to go through every day with. And then your autonomic nervous system is saying, no, you've got to deal with this. You've got to get this dealt with because if you don't, we're going to start punishing you. So one of the things that I do to help people with panic attacks is tell them to embrace the panic attack because they
Yes.
feel it. I've had them myself. So it just, if you
Me
feel
too.
them coming on, like embrace them, make, say, I, you know,
Don't
I say,
resist them.
and I say the opposite, actually, like
Yeah.
embrace them, like bring them in. And like, I'll say to myself, okay, I'm going to make this the best. And I sometimes in my mind use the F word. I'm going to make the best effing panic attack I've ever had. Like, bring it on. Let's go. Let's
Yes.
go. Like, bring it on. If you're going to give me a panic attack, let's really go for it. Now, that's very hard to do because most people are so afraid of panic attack. But when you do that, you take control of it for one, like, even if it's only psychological control, you're not a victim of it anymore. You're actually bringing it on. And then you allow yourself to feel the bodily sensations and not make a huge story about it. Because what panic attacks do is they fire up your body in this fearful way. And then you start making a story about it.
Yes.
And it's
And
like, oh,
then
I'm
you
having a
think
heart
you're going
attack.
to die
I'm having a
and you
stroke.
live. Yeah,
And then,
I
of course,
agreed.
that makes the alarm worse.
I
So you get
agreed.
into this exaggerated alarm anxiety cycle, which is what panic attacks are. So if you can embrace the alarm in your body, you take the wind out of its sails. But it's hard. It's very hard to do. But if you can train yourself to do it, panic attack. I have panic attacks now and I actually enjoy them because I enjoy the rush because I don't add all that negativity to it anymore.
No,
I know it's going to be temporary. But I actually do enjoy the rush. It's actually, I don't get them anymore. And I kind of miss them in a way.
I had them in the middle of the night, like really.
Yeah.
And then I learned that excitement is quite similar to, you know, the
Very
physiological
similar.
thing. Yeah. So, but we can have so many interesting, you know,
Sure.
conversations. Thank you so much for your time.
Of
I
course,
really
Anya.
appreciate it. I'm in
Anytime.
Belgium, you're in Canada, and
Yep.
I love technology so that we can do that. So thank you for this amazing conversation. I will come back to the audience just now. Thank you, Dr. Russ.
You're welcome anytime.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Wow, wasn't that a beautiful conversation? Even I, an expert myself in stress, conscious self-care, living authentic success, I have learned so much again about anxiety, which is a word that we use so much in our society. But this radio show, this conversation has once more explained it in depth. And I am so happy to have had this explanation from Dr. Russ, who to me is really an expert. And you can hear it in every explanation, in every sentence, in every example that he's giving. And I really am happy that he talked so much about our childhood, about trauma, about the fact that 80% of brain development starts already before it is all going on. It occurs before you're 5 years old. So every child, you and I, we all have had our trauma. And what is normal for us, what has happened to us, what we have interpreted and ingrained in ourselves in our childhood will replicate in our adult life. And so isn't it interesting how Dr. Russ explained to us that anxiety is not just the anxious thought we tell ourselves in the mind, but it's an alarm anxiety cycle that is going on. It's the pain that we cause when we believe those thoughts and how that nervous system goes into a high alert. And then, of course, I love his jabs. The judge, the abandon, the blame, and the shame. I see it every single week in my practice when I do my hypnosis sessions, RTT sessions, when we go deep into the coaching sessions. I hear it all the time when we make the unconscious conscious. how we realize that we have been judging, abandoning, blaming, and shaming ourselves. We have internalized all that blame and that judgment. And of course, the body goes then into a fight flight. So certainly for sensitive people, 99% of the people that I have in my practice are highly sensitive people. But for anybody, if you are born sensitive, then this interview certainly has touched you. So it is really beautiful to say that we can heal from anxiety disorders, that we can heal from anxiety and panic attacks, etc. Because it happens so often that I hear people say, I'm suffering from this for years. And I know that when we treat the underlying cause, the root cause of the problem, when we go into trauma, go into the inner child perception and experience, then in the body, that's where we can heal. So we have to, like Dr. Russ was saying to us, going to look into the body and describe for ourselves what color, what form. You know, there's the mind-body connection that I talk about so much in all my articles, in my shows. But once again, after this conversation, I realize why it is so important to talk about it, because the healing sits in that mind-body connection, into going into the body. We need to stop living in our heads, in our thoughts, where the monsters are, the demons are, the worrying, the assumptions, the judgments, and we need to go more into our bodies. That was really, really clear. And so the age regression that we do when we, you know, with the amygdala, like Dr. Russ was saying to us, it's mainly the smell. I find that a very interesting little detail, that the smell goes straight directly into our emotional brain. So we can use a lot the smell to calm us. And we need to go soothing, compassionate conversations, voice and smell, to give that 5-year-old, 8-year-old, 6-year-old, whatever, to give that love, to give that soothing, that compassion, that calm, to stop the cycle. And so I really love, as much as I, you know that every single day anxiety is giving you a message. It is telling you to go back into childhood. I lived with anxiety for so long and I was so ill. I couldn't even get up. My whole immune system suffered. My whole immune system collapsed after the lung virus, if you know my story. But it was, the body was showing it with anxiety attacks, with panic attacks at night. So we need to make the unconscious conscious. And so instead of resisting the pain, isn't that a beautiful message to you, to me, to everyone listening here? We need to stop resisting the pain, and we need to learn to go into the pain and deal with it. Because every escape that we do, whether it's food, drinks, screen, every escape becomes a habit, becomes an addiction. And that is more and more difficult to treat. So yes, we learned today that anxiety is an alarm in the body and that we need to separate it. We need to sit with the sensation without explanation. So I really, really love that. So I want to thank again, Dr. Russ, because anxiety, like you said, and that's what I want to end with it today as well. It's not the anxiety in your mind. It's the alarm in your body. Isn't that what it's all about? So go into your body. As he was explaining, don't try to get the solution with the water, with, you know, skipping out the water out of the boat. Go and find the hole in the boat. And I want to end this for this week. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I trust you get a lot out of it. Maybe even go and listen again because I'm going to listen to it again. And I'm, you know, I know for myself that there's little details in there that can even for me be very healing and that I'm going to use in my practice again and again. So I trust that you had, you know, a great, great time with me. And if you want more, as I said in the intro, go on my Instagram, Danielle Sachs, go there, follow me, because I've got so much more to give. From me to you, I will talk to you next week. Bye-bye for now.
From Stress to Authentic Success was presented by Danielle Sachs. Join Danielle at the same time next week here on UK Health Radio. And meanwhile, for more on how to thrive in business and everyday life by being true to yourself, go to daniellesachs.com.